With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name is David Reed, and this is Marek Larwood.
My name is Marek Larwood.
Yeah?
My voice is very tired today.
And how is your psyche, your soul?
Broken.
Why? What have you been up to?
I've been forced to accept this building up suspense here.
Yeah.
A part in the play. Playing Father Christmas.
You'd be good at that.
I didn't want to do it. The man phoned me up. He said, hello, Marek. I said, hello. He said, are you working at the moment? No. Do you want to be in the play? Well, I said, well, yeah, how much is the money?
Yeah.
Just enough to break even. Yeah, I'll do it. It's not going to be loads of lines, is it? It's not going to be loads, so I have to learn loads of lines. No, it won't be. There's not any singing, is it? Not, I can't sing. No, well, hardly any. Oh, can I see the script? You've got to sign the contract, first of all.
That's when alarm bells should start ringing. Normally, you see the script before you sign the contract.
When does the job start? Oh, it starts in 2 weeks. Is there only 2 weeks rehearsals? Yeah. Oh, right, as long as there's not many lines to learn. Script comes, there's three people in this fucking thing. Script comes through, 40 pages, mostly Father Christmas.
Who are the other two characters?
A girl.
Sounds good.
And a man who controls a pig.
What? The pig controller?
He's a puppeteer and he also plays a doctor, and the pig's called Sausage.
Okay, so is the character man who controls pigs, or is puppeteer of a pig?
The character is the doctor, and a man in the zoo. And I had to just do a day rehearsal. I don't like talking that much. I definitely don't enjoy having to recite lines for 8 hours. I mean, my mum is the very opposite of Father Christmas.
So where's this play on, and how can Film Fandango fans go and support it?
I am not telling anyone.
I think you are. You just did.
I am not going to tell anyone about the details of this play.
Okay.
And I've got to shave off my facial hair so it looks like an egg. And I've got to have a glue on beard, which is the worst.
Why can't you just grow your beard? Oh, it's only 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Face glue is a real horrible thing, isn't it?
It is really awful.
Even after you've used the Terps or whatever to get the beard off,
it still sticks there.
And then it gets dust, doesn't
yeah.
it? Dust sticks to it. And diesel
sleep,
in the
When you
street.
Try and sleep at night, you just get slightly stuck to your pillow.
Yeah, and then it builds up over, because you'll put it on every day. Because I used to put it on for the third Penny Dreadfuls play.
What's the consequences over time?
You know what? I only put on tiny amounts in the end where I was just like, you know what? If it starts to peel off during the scene, because it was for one scene, it was a quick change moustache. Okay. But I was just like, if it starts to fall off, we'll just make a feature of it, because it stinks, you know? You feel
I have to wear a heavy beard.
Yeah. Is it a kid's show? A kid's going to be pulling on your beard and stuff?
I'm not going to be anywhere near me.
Because you'll be stinking a bit.
I really regret it.
Oh, I'm sorry, man.
Well, it's not about that, is it?
It's not about that. Although I do enjoy these windows into your life. Parts of the show. We're going to talk about films, and you went to the cinema, didn't you?
I went to see Patterson.
Now, Patterson, is a film starring Adam Driver.
Yes.
Kylo Ren.
Adam Driver is the lead. His name is Patterson. He lives in a town called Patterson.
Hello.
He drives the bus, the Patterson bus. Everything's called Patterson, pretty much.
Really?
This is, well, no, quite a few things are. This is directed by Jim Jarmusch.
Oh, yeah, I do. He did Coffee and Cigarettes, didn't he?
Coffee and Cigarettes. I've seen Broken Flowers, Ghost Dog, the story of the Way of Samurai, which I didn't particularly like. Broken Flowers, I was slightly disappointed by, because I don't think it was Bill Murray's best film. He's done films like Dead Man.
He did that one with Tom Waits and Roberto Benigni in prison.
Yeah, is it Coffee and Cigarettes?
No, it's pre-Coffee and Cigarettes. Anyway.
Down by Law.
Down by Law, that's the one. Coffee and Cigarettes I like. So it's a bit hit and miss. It's a load of short stories, all in black and white, about people drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes. So one of them's Tom Waits and Iggy Pop.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is Bill Murray and RZA and GZA from the Wu-Tang Clan.
Blimey.
Which is particularly good. One is Kate Blanchett talking to herself as...
Those all things she'd do,
she does
it?
That a lot. Yeah. She likes to play everyone. She's a bit like Eddie Murphy in that way.
Very much. In the... what's it called? The
Clumps.
The Clumps.
Professor 2, Meet the Clumps.
Meet the Twats.
Yeah. But it's quite good. There's actually the best one is Steve Coogan talking to what's his name? Alfred Molina.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and Alfred Molina claims to have been tracing his family history back, and he finds out him and Steve Coogan are distantly related, and he's really excited, and he's telling him, and Steve Coogan just wants nothing to do with him. It's really funny.
So this film, Jim Drummond, he's sort of an auteur, really, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's one
definitely.
Of the art house filmmakers.
But he's got quite a good eye for humour, I think, which is, you know, unlike a lot of art house stuff, which can just be a bit whimsical. He's actually occasionally very funny.
Well, there's two things going with this film. Adam Driver has got that sort of unique charisma, and he can carry a film. And this is whereas Kylo Ren isn't the perfect part for him, I don't think. This is a sort of great part for Adam Driver, who plays a man. What's fascinating is, it's quite relevant to a modern time. He's a man who he's a poet. He's got his book and he writes poems, and the poems come up on the screen. And he's happy being a bus driver.
Mm.
He's got a very eccentric girlfriend he lives with, who's an artist who dresses in black and white. And it just follows. It's one of those films where, not like Groundhog Day, where it's the same day over again. It just follows a week in the life of his life. So it's all about minutia. That you see the first scene and it builds up, you know, the humour and the repetitiveness of it. So it's very, very slow. But it's quite... I think I was reading a bit about it, and he said he wanted to do a film about a man who's quite happy with in his own world, without technology. I think that's the thing now. Everyone's got to know everything about each other. He hasn't got a mobile phone. He doesn't go on the internet. And it feels quite nice to watch because of that. It feels... as though a man living in the way of life without technology, who just does things like when he will go to a bar and have a drink and talk to people, rather than in the silence he has is thoughtful silence, rather than I better get my phone out.
Yeah.
Which you don't see. People don't ever stop and contemplate. I think they always. You instantly...
I think plenty of people still do.
No, I don't.
When you have your phone, it's very easy to forget that some people aren't completely locked into this. Many, many are, obviously. But
I think the phone thing is brilliant because you can be really rude to people, ignore people.
Yeah.
You don't want to speak to them, but then again, you just end up reaching it out of habit.
Yes. I've found I've occasionally developed that sort of... It's almost a nervous tick of when before you'd sort of feel the awkwardness of a silence, or like, you know, just you're waiting and you've got that awkwardness of I don't know how long I'm going to be waiting, and you would sort of then start to think about things and slowly get out of it, whereas these days as soon as that impulse kicks in you reach into your pocket and get your phone out, and it has become a sort of nervous tick now. It's like you don't need to check Facebook right now, you don't need to check your emails, you'll know when something's coming through. You know, but it's odd, isn't it? So is there any actual story to speak of, or is it mostly just a sort of portrait of a man's day-to-day existence?
It is, with a few things that happen, but you're not really watching it for the story. I don't know why you're watching it, really. It's 1 hour and 58 minutes, which is half an hour too long, as usual.
Yeah, yeah.
At one point, I thought, well, you can speed this up a bit. And is something going to happen or not? All the acting's great. It looks great. It feels as though sometimes you're absorbed in a reality show. It's so mundane.
Right.
But without there being so many twats in it.
Sure.
I watched some reality shows recently. I was astounded by how stupid people were.
Are you talking about Joel Dommett?
No, not Joel. I know Joel. I'm talking about, if you talk about I'm a Celebrity...
He was the runner-up, wasn't he?
Yeah, Joel, guest of the show, has been a runner-up on that. But I watched I'm a Celebrity because he's in that. And I was amazed when I watched an episode when he was trying to do Morse code with people.
Right.
And even he's one of the nicest men in the world. You know, really, really... he's not got a bad word saying anything. And I could see him getting annoyed by how thick the people were incapable of... He didn't know what Morse code was.
Right.
And didn't know the dots and dashes and which... And the conversations I heard in the jungle, oh my God, were so bland and so stupid. I thought, these people are just as thick as shit.
Yeah.
And they should be shot.
And
this is the reason why I would never get put on a reality show.
I don't know. I mean, those views are becoming more popular in the English-speaking world, aren't they, really?
What are you saying?
You might be alt-right. You want to shoot people for being thick? Sounds pretty fascistic to me.
Not really, is it?
Is it not? Is it left? It's quite a lefty thing, isn't it? Shooting people
These
for being
things
thick.
Go round in circles anyway, isn't it?
What things?
It's new liberal, is what it is. I am new liberal.
Yeah. Murder the thick.
Well, not just heavy discipline, first of all.
Heavy discipline with bullets.
No, just give them just concentrate a bit more.
Punch them until they get cleverer. Read a book! Read a book!
It's a good idea.
How do you implement it, though? That's the thing. It's
we're talking about films, not...
Yeah, sure.
Not my new liberal regime.
I'm finding it hard to get into Patterson from your description of
it. It's very odd because it just feels as though you become absorbed by this film.
Is it watchable? As in, does it grab you?
It is watchable, but it feels though this world is quite... A lot of films, the story is a bit two-dimensional, the world's two-dimensional. It's all about the world creating this scene.
Yeah.
Of where he lives in his life. And it feels so dense and heavy with the small characterisations. It's the minutiae. It's getting rewards from tiny little things that repeat. And that's why I mentioned Groundhog Day, because the first time you watch it, he gets up and then the music repeats each time.
It was on the other night.
It's almost setting up the first thing. You don't realise you're watching it. Then the jokes appear with a familiarity.
Yes.
And that's what the humour comes in with this. You realise he's quite an eccentric, and there are odd things that happen. There's lots of twins appear in it. A few sort of odd quirks.
Right.
And him listening to conversations on the bus. So it feels as though you become a citizen of Patterson.
Right.
And part of that life. So it's a different... Rather than you're following a story, it's not his story, but you're almost an observer in
his... Of his observations.
Yes.
Right.
And a slight insight into his mind, which feels quite refreshing, which I'd say in other films you might not get that because it's more story. It's a real character film.
Right.
I don't know if I've described that well
enough. No, I get the sense of it.
I enjoyed it. I give it six or seven Mareks.
Okay.
I'm fascinated to hear what our lovely... I was going to say viewers for a second.
I hope no one's watching. We have no way of them doing that other than...
I really hope no one's watching what we're doing right now.
Other than with binoculars from the building opposite.
That would be scary, wouldn't it?
Yeah, or through the scope of a sniper rifle.
Oh, I always think of Predator with the threes.
I mean, it's overkill. You don't need three laser pens, do you? He's always trying to distract referees. with his laser pens, the Predator, isn't it?
I've listened to the Predator soundtrack so much, it's on my iPod,
yeah,
which can only carry about 400 songs. It's an old one. 10 of them are songs from the Predator soundtrack. So there's a good chance, if I go for a long walk, that I will. I will somehow be...
Have you seen the Alien vs. Predator films?
No.
You
good.
Haven't, and you're that big a fan of Predator.
Predator 2 is actually quite good as well.
I thought Alien vs. Predator was one of the worst films
I
ever seen.
I think I have seen that, actually.
Until I saw the sequel, which... And it makes the first one seem like... a piece of classic cinema.
Oh, really?
History. Yeah, yeah. The second one is like one of those scary movie films, basically.
Oh, really?
It's so bad. Anyway, I keep going off Patterson. So, 6 or 7?
I'd be really intrigued just to hear what our viewers have to say, and then we'll get an email and we'll forget about it, and it'll be in about 4 or 5 weeks' time, read it out, and I've forgotten what I've said.
Absolutely, yes.
That's what I would like to happen.
Well, there is an opportunity for that to happen again with this.
Some people are writing letters, we like reading them out.
This is from Chris Beaton, and he says, "Dear David, Marek and Buddy, your recent podcast where David discussed Elstree and how people are prepared to give over their hard-earned cash for the signature of an extra in Star Wars got me thinking about film merchandise and how there are some films that people just need everything which bears any connection to the film." That's right, buddy. Star Wars is one of them for me, although I draw the line at paying for any signature, whether they were in Star Wars or not. Are there any film franchises that you guys just have a need to own every bit of merchandise going? Also, is the mass commercialisation of film franchises in terms of merchandising killing the films which are unable to compete in that field? Grateful for your views. Love the podcast. Thanks, Chris. Now, I was a massive fan of Star Wars figures when I was a kid. Like, that was, you know, my principal thing I would play with. Like, over Lego. I had loads of Lego as well, but it was that over Lego and everything. It was just spilling all of the figures and vehicles and stuff out onto the carpet and just playing out scenarios and building things.
But they were the main thing, weren't they? When part of the best bit was looking on the back when they... That was a genius.
Yeah, yeah.
Of showing all 100 and their names.
Which ones don't I have?
Got, need.
Yeah, but in terms of merchandise, I feel no need to own anything from any of these things anymore.
Yeah, I'm too old for that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I don't begrudge people who... want to have t-shirts emblazoned with Harley Quinn or whatever, but it's not something that really does it for me anymore.
I do think that it does affect cinema, though, that these films that are more marketable...
Without a doubt.
Disney bought Star Wars and the merchandise, didn't it?
The merchandising rights is the main thing. So I think we may have talked about it before, and in a couple of weeks' time, I'm going to go see Rogue One, the new Star Wars film. Just before Christmas, so we'll talk about it then. But I have no doubt that the reason they're going backwards in time and doing prequels is because part of what they've bought for however many billion it was is they've bought the rights to make toys of Darth Vader and Yoda, both of whom are, and Boba Fett, all of whom are now dead in the chronology. And so, if they're going to make toys, they need to introduce these characters to new kids, which means going back in time when the characters were still alive. And that's why they're doing Rogue One, a Star Wars story, Han Solo, a Star Wars story, Boba Fett, a Star Wars story, Bib Fortuna, a Star Wars story.
Who's Bib Fortuna?
It's just one of the sort of smaller characters in Empire Strikes Back. He's the sort of vizier character to Jabba the Hutt. You know, the one with the Twi'lek with the
oh, that guy, yeah, thing. The grey thing, the grey long... the grey worm. Then.
Yeah, sort of thing.
Here we go, here's a question from Darren Rogers. "Guys, while watching Django Unchained recently, I was wondering what your opinions were on Quentin Tarantino. Is he still the enfant terrible of modern day cinema, or has his time been and gone? Did you like any of his earlier work? What were your favourites? I would put True Romance in my top 10 films of all time. I never tire of watching it. Keep playing Volksball, Darren."
That's true. Quentin Tarantino's early work, I think, is sublime, especially his directorial stuff. So obviously Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction. Jackie Brown, I think, is wonderful as well and underrated.
Yeah.
Kill Bill, I think, is good, but it did lose me slightly. I wasn't as into it as some other people were. I didn't think it needed to be two films. But and Django, again, left me slightly cold, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
I didn't enjoy it that much. Inglourious Basterds, I think, is excellent.
I think it's... the more I watch Inglourious Basterds... With Quentin Tarantino, you watch Reservoir Dogs again and Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
And you think, I didn't especially enjoy Pulp Fiction on the first watch.
Really?
The second time I thought, oh, this is brilliant.
Yeah.
This is totally different, groundbreaking stuff. The problem is, he just uses the same tricks too many times, and it becomes, it is the law of diminishing returns. And I think, The Hateful Eight, I thought was really poor.
Because of what you said about it, I still haven't got around to watching it.
There's no point watching it. It's just a sort of, typical, he ends with just big shootout, trying to... He loves that Mexican standoff type thing, yeah. And he's used that too many times. Inglourious Basterds, I loved it the first time, but I think I said it before, on the second watch, I thought, there's two brilliant scenes, the rest of it's just a lot of filler, I think.
I would rather have had a film just about the woman running the cinema, who knows that, you know, the Nazis are going to have
rather
a screening.
Than his weird Brad Pitt sort of...
Brad Pitt's the worst bit in that. Not him personally, but his storyline is the worst bit.
It does change the
scene
a bit.
The scene at the beginning with Christoph Waltz is fantastic, and the one in the basement, actually, which is Brad Pitt and his men, but it's Michael Fassbender and another actor, basically, doing their scene, is brilliant. And then actually I really like the story of the one with the cinema where it's all ending. But it as a film, I really enjoy it.
I think it's really, I think
it's got some odd decisions, like Mike Myers' comedy kernel.
Yeah.
It's a very odd decision to have that in there. And
I just think his early stuff was so... He set the bar so high.
Yeah.
Even the stuff he does now, it's not bad, but you just feel they're all ending in the same...
Mm.
They would have had that same sort of climax that he hasn't really escaped from. I don't know.
I don't know. I like his stuff. I think he's done some things that will always be remembered. And bloody hell, that's a
incredible. I mean, he's been incredible and really influential. So I don't really want to say a bad word against him. Have you seen a film, David?
I've seen a few films, actually. But one I'd like to talk about is one I had never seen, despite the fact I love this director's work.
Oh, and yes.
That is John Carpenter's Assault on Precinct 13.
This was his first... Well, I've seen this about 15 years ago. This was his first... One of his first films, wasn't it? It was so low budget.
That's right. And it's basically... A Western siege, basically a standoff, the whole film, but set in the 70s or whenever it was made in 76.
So what's the vague outline?
Basically, there is a police precinct that is being wound down because it's being closed, and so it's got like a skeleton staff that are just keeping it open, but basically to field phone calls to tell people, no, you need to go to this other one. And all of these strands collide on this venue in the same evening where a bus transporting criminals needs to stop off there because one of the criminals is ill, or might be ill. And also a gang has recently had six guys gunned down by policemen, so are out for revenge. And so they, for some reason, they just go on this sort of weird... blood ritual vendetta where they don't care if they live or die, and they basically assault the precinct.
But there's an ice cream van in it somewhere.
That scene is famous, and it's a slight spoiler here. It came out in 76. This happens in the first 20 minutes of the film, but this is a slight spoiler if you'd like to see it, so maybe skip ahead.
Should I do a sound? Spoiler!
Spoiler! That's the sound. Basically, a little girl is going for an ice cream when the gang drive past.
Oh, that's all we need to say, isn't it?
No, because it's cinematic history, this scene, because the little girl is shot in the chest, stone dead. And that, it was the first time anything of that ilk had been shown in a film. And I read about this because I was like, that is pretty strong. You know, it's a young girl. And the way John Carpenter got it past the censors was he sent them a different version. And then when they passed the film, because it would have been an X-rated film, which meant in those days very few would have seen it. And then he submitted the version with the child shooting to the cinemas, and by that point it was too late.
That's very clever.
I know.
And it's got his really lo-fi but brilliant music.
His own keyboard music.
It's great though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great. It's The Thing is the one that I always remember of his soundtracks. I mean, they're not always brilliant, but this is pre-Halloween, this film. So, which has an incredible soundtrack as well. Of just, like, what do you call them? Like, drones? Is that what you'd call them? The sort of, just these sort of electronica...
It's weird synth, but him almost playing it with one finger.
Yeah, yeah. It's great. So anyway, there's basically this cop who's just come back onto active duty. I don't believe we ever find out why he was off in the first place, but you assume it's an injury or something. And he wants to get right back out there on the streets, and his superior officer puts him on this cushy job, basically babysitting this precinct until it's over. And he's like, oh, God damn it. And then all hell breaks loose. But it's very Romero, actually, sort of zombies, because these gang members are inhuman, basically. I don't mean they're sort of going or anything, but they are not humanized by the director. You know, so it really is just a, like, Zulu-style siege of just, like, just kill anyone, anything. Mm. And, of course, you know, the criminals have to cooperate with the policemen and anyone who's left alive in this building to try and withhold this onslaught of violent people.
Things are much simpler in the olden days, weren't they?
It's a bloody good film, mate.
Yeah.
It's incredible. I really, really enjoyed it. And it's so simple in its story, but the characters are characters. Like, it made it so obvious to me, because this is from 76, so it's a old film, you know. It feels...
Well, not that old.
Well, no, but I mean, anything pre-Star Wars feels like it's actually from a different era, slightly.
I've only said that because I was born in 76.
No, fair enough. But it made it very obvious to me that mostly how modern films tell you a character is something is somebody says that's what you are to their face. And it's the worst piece of writing ever, whereas back then people just had an attitude and were something, you know.
And this people from...
So someone would have an attitude problem, whereas today a character would point at their face and go, you know what, you've got an attitude problem. That's how we tell the audience they have an attitude problem these days. It's just like, no, the dialogue was kind of subtler and better back then.
And it's got the bloke from Rocky, isn't he? The corner man in Rocky, the black guy, bald guy's in this.
Is he? Which guy? The guy. Oh, is that? I didn't recognise him, you know. Are you sure it's him?
Yep.
Who's he playing this?
Wells in this.
Hang on a second.
I'll show you.
Oh, so he's not the main guy. Yeah.
No, but he's one of the...
Yes, yes. Oh, I didn't recognise him, but he's one of the criminals.
Yeah. I remember him from it.
And he's the one who just goes, I've been unlucky my entire life. And it's quite sad.
Where did you watch it? Is it on TV then, or is it...
It was on streaming, you know. So if you just go to sort of the front pages of Netflix or whatever, you'll only get the modern blockbuster stuff they're trying to feed you and the stand-up DVDs. But if you go searching around the sort of back end of stuff, you can find loads of old films that are up on
there. It's amazing, isn't it, how many, if you go to the actual type of things in, there's tons of stuff and stuff that you never find. Yeah.
And in fact, I'm remembering now, I found this on, I've got an Xbox 360, and I found it on the Microsoft Video Store that is an enormous library of films. Huge. And so if you just look through the genres and search through stuff. And what's good is every film's page has its trailer on it. So as soon as you look, it plays you the trailer and you go...
Oh, great.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that looks quite fun. I'll bung that one. So I watched it on there. But it's... I'd give it like 9 Davids. I think it's okay. It's not quite up there with The Thing or Halloween for me, but you know that this dude knows his cinema and loves his cinema, but also has some new ideas as well of how to make films just sort of hypnotic. Like, there's a female character in it as well, who is the woman who mans the phones normally, and she is so unlike any female character from the 70s around that time. Like, she's just sort of level-headed and not screaming and hugging the men. She's just sort of like sociopathic. She's not even like, yeah, she's cool, look how awesome she is. She's just sort of sensible, and you just go, I've never seen that. The actress apparently hated her portrayal, but John Carpenter really, really liked
it. Okay.
She regretted the decisions she made, but it was really good.
Well, watch that then.
Yeah, Assault on Precinct 13. Apparently there was a remake made.
Yes, but it's rubbish, wasn't it?
Total shit, from what I've heard.
Well, it's quite recent, there.
Is it? Was it Lawrence Fishburne was in it? It was 2005.
Thingy with Jobs, wasn't it?
Ethan Hawke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone knew when I said Thingy with Jobs that I meant Ethan Hawke.
Yes. He is Thingy with Jobs.
Thingy with Jobs.
I like Ethan Hawke. I think he's...
I've grown to like him more since...
Well, he's better now. I think now he's an older guy. He's sort of more interesting. I found him a slightly boring... pretty heartthrob in the 90s, but I think he's good now. A bit like Keanu Reeves as well. Like, they've matured.
I've quite always liked Keanu Reeves.
Well, so have I, but he's better now than he was.
Point Break was pretty good.
He's good in Speed, actually, as well.
Yeah.
No, he's always been good.
Yeah.
He's always been good.
Well.
No, but I'm glad I've seen it, because John Carpenter is ace, apart from, you know, some later stuff like Ghosts of Mars, which is appalling.
Seen that one.
It's a bit like somebody tried to make Mad Max Fury Road in one soundstage indoors, but it's all set outdoors, but on Mars, but with crazy
Ghosts
people.
Of Mars. Ghosts of Mars. Terrible.
And it's got, is it LL Cool J and the woman from Species, I think, is in it?
Oh, yeah. Natasha, what's her name? What's her name? Not Ethan. I'm not talking about Ethan Hawke.
Oh, no, sorry, it's not LL Cool J, it's another rapper. It's Ice Cube. But Jason Statham is in it, and Pam Grier from Jackie Brown.
Wow.
Yeah, but it is not strong. It's not strong.
Well, watch those films then. Go and watch them. And also, write letters, and also donate money.
Yes. If I could elaborate on what Marek's just said, if you'd like to write to us, then go to filmfandango.co.uk. Or com, actually. We've got both. You can fill out the form there and we'll read your letter out on the programme. Also, we do all of this for free. So again, you can go to filmfandango.com and click the donate button if you'd like the show to continue. And everyone who has, thank you very much. It's going to be a lean Christmas in the Reed and Larwood households. But, you're helping us through.
Good luck with your lives.
Good luck with your lives. That's our new catchphrase. And remember, good luck with your lives!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.